Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest chapter, the latest edition, the latest episode of Life on Planet Porky. And of course, what would Planet Porky be without the rock chick extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones, who, of course, is with me again now. Hello, Leslie Ann. How's life?
Oh, it's very good, this Ann. Cracking, as they say. How's it at your end?
Well, it's pretty good. I don't know if you keep up with me on Twitter, but I decided yesterday, because it was a gorgeous autumn day, okay, and I decided to go for a picnic in the park, okay? So I'm down here in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey. There's a park, you know, which goes on for miles and miles and miles. That was the line, wasn't it, in the Right Said Fred song?
Leg- well, from The Who, actually.
Oh, was it?
I thought I can see for miles and miles.
I can see for miles and... That's right, yeah, but I think in that... Right Said Fred song, they nicked that line and her legs go on for miles and miles. But anyway, there you go. You're probably
that right. Must have been a parody.
It must have been a parody. I totally agree. So anyway, I go deep into the park and the trees are so beautiful. The colours are gorgeous. And I find a bench. OK, and it's honestly, it is so quintessentially, you know, England. So I sit on the bench and I'm looking at the trees and all that. And I thought, I tell you what, I wouldn't mind a beer. Right. So I get up and I go off and found a little shop and I got a pint of beer, a small bottle of, very small bottle of Pinot Grigio and a packet of pork pies, okay? And had a picnic.
Well, that was your picnic?
Yes, on my picnic, yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was glorious.
I had visions of you with a sort of lovely wicker basket with a tablecloth and porcelain plates and nice polished stainless steel cutlery and a glass for your wine.
No. To drink.
Sounds a bit rough and ready to me.
It was a bit rough and ready, but, you know, I improvise. I've done it all my life. You have as well. You know, if you're in the middle of the Sinai Desert and somebody's trying to bomb you, you improvise by running away, if you see what
I mean. It's funny you say pork pies because we used to joke, I don't know if you remember this, back in the old Fleet Street days, that if we wrote a sort of collective autobiography of our days as journalists, the title was going to be Pork Pie in a Phone Box, because that was a business lunch.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it would have been, yeah. I, talking about those food on in Fleet Street, I remember once getting a... I got an expenses claim when I was a news editor from a crime correspondent, a guy called John... I've forgotten his name now, and he'll won't thank me for that. He's a great colleague for years, but John was the crime correspondent for years on the Express, and he used to mix with a lot of policemen, you know, all the time. And coppers drink an awful lot of large whiskies, you know. I remember the expenses invoice came in from the Albert Pub on Victoria Street next to Scotland Yard, and it had something like, you know, four large whiskies, two large gins, six pints of lager, two brandies, three Dubonnets. One packet of crisps, and that was a that was the lunch.
Hmm? That was a working lunch.
That was a working lunch, absolutely. Goodness. But there we are. So I was very pleased with myself. I thought, well, you know, I'm getting out and about. The pubs are empty. What can somebody do just to socialise and enjoy a drink? Needless to say, I took a picture of the beer. Oh, and by the way, I bought for £5.50. I bought a cup to drink my beer out of, you know,
£5.50.
Yes, yeah, for a mug, for a white mug, yeah.
Well, that's expensive. You could probably get five in Sainsbury's for £5.
Yeah, I know, but it was the only mug they had in the shop, and I said,
"Well, who was the mug here?"
Yeah, well, funnily enough, when somebody asked about it, I said it was my twin. You know, taking the Mickey out of myself as I always do. But anyway. yeah. So I then lined up my fare, my beer, my wine, and my pork pies and my cup, and took a picture. And of course, what happened, you know, all the rather good humoured, but it all came back, you know, hey, Porky, when a man is reduced to drinking and eating pork pies on a park bench, the end can't be far away. So that was a bit
harsh.
That's
pretty rude, isn't it,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, pretty harsh.
I mean, look, if you want to go out and enjoy the countryside and the beautiful autumn day and whatever you choose to scoff and swill, that's nobody's business but yours.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. But anyway, I shared it with my adoring flock and 97% of them said, good on you. But, you know, one or two suggesting that I'm on the slippery slope. Well, talking about the slippery slope, of course, what about the shenanigans Downing Street, Leslie Ann. Now, you've got a bit of an insight into this, haven't you? But basically, Lily, Carrie, what's her surname?
Carrie Simons or Simmons. I'm never quite sure how to pronounce it.
Yeah, who's not an elected official, is not even married to the Prime Minister, though she is mother of his latest child, seems to have been able to influence enough power to get rid of the man that the Prime Minister wanted to appoint as his chief of staff, right? Whose name I've forgotten. I'm just going to find it. I'm reaching for a paper here. It's reporting all this morning's papers, isn't it? And war has broken out now. Here, I'm going to find it. Name. His name's, here we go, Lee Kane, OK? And he was going to be appointed head of staff. He was already something like, you know, head of PR or something. And apparently he's not liked by any of the women in Downing Street. Carrie Fisher, the new lady who's been taken
Carrie
on.
Carrie Simons, even.
Carrie Simons, Carrie Fisher, I'm going mad. Carrie Simons. And he's not liked by the lady, Allegra, is it? The girl who's been taken on to be the face of Downing Street, Allegra Strachan.
Yeah.
So, and even Priti Patel, the female Home Secretary, seems to have weighed in. And this guy was blocked and now he's resigned. I mean, golly, talk about girl power.
Well, I know from a friend of mine who works at Whitehall.
Right.
She tells me that Carrie is all powerful, that Boris hardly moves without her say so.
Really?
And I think she's the new kind of number 10 figurehead, isn't she? She's the poster girl of all the young Tories. I think she validates Boris in lots of ways.
Yeah.
You know, we knew Boris as a sex god, didn't we? Convention busting, law unto himself, liar. you know, yeah. I had more wives, mistresses, and kids than principals.
Well, that's right.
She doesn't seem to mind all that. She takes him as he is.
Yeah.
She's a very modern girl. She's in the communications business. She was 8 years at Conservative Party headquarters.
She was, you're
before
right.
She went off to become advisor for Oceana, didn't she?
Yes,
which
that's
is
right.
A marine protection charity.
That's right, yeah, like
But I think
the world.
She's a modern girl. And I think the idea of Downing Street as the old sort of pinnacle of old school respectability and all that, that's been defined.
Mm.
That's gone now. Mm. And it seems to me that, like, this Lee Kane guy was one of those old school types that they don't want kicking around anymore.
Well, he's very close to Dominic Cummings. We all know who Dominic Cummings is because he became even more famous with the Durham incident, driving to Durham after the first lockdown, saying he was testing his eyes when he went for a 30-mile drive while he was in Durham. And he's all powerful. And this guy, Kane, and he are best mates. That would have meant a duopoly of, you know, rock-hard sort of male macho power around the Prime Minister. And apparently, Carrie stepped in and said, we're not having it. Allegra doesn't want it. I don't want it. Priti Patel doesn't want it. And this guy's now gone and he's lost a major ally. He's interesting, that Lee Kane guy, because we've all got a past. And his past was he used to be a political writer on the Daily Mirror, right? Which, of course, is not, in to any stretch of the imagination, a conservative paper. But when he was on the Mirror, his editor, who was Piers Morgan, got him to dress up as a chicken and run around after David Cameron during the election campaign when Cameron became Prime Minister, flapping his arms around as a chicken to say you're chicken because you won't enter the Prime Ministerial TV debate. So Lee Kane went from that, baiting a Tory Prime Minister, to becoming another Tory Prime Minister's chief aide. The political world works in weird ways.
There are no boundaries these days, are there?
I don't think there are. I think you're right.
I think that the media will always hold up Carrie as a way of attacking Boris.
Well, I hope not.
She's unable to make any kind of independent career all the while he's in office. And I think we've seen history has told us that, hasn't it, really, from Cherie Blair onwards.
Yes.
I think maybe Samantha Cameron was more successful at that. But she's a tough bird. And look, if Ivanka Trump can become an advisor in the White House, then why can't Carrie take on some sort of role in Downing Street? It wouldn't surprise me at all if she isn't appointed as something quite soon.
Well, that's very interesting. But as you say, she seems to wield enough power as it is behind the scenes. Because he looks like he's been emasculated, really, doesn't he? When he stands up in the House of Commons now, if it was a full House of Commons, just imagine the way the Labour MPs would go at it, you know what I mean? Oh, has Carrie given you permission to be out, Prime Minister? You know, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, now, as people are listening to this very podcast, Leslie Ann, it is Friday the 13th, OK? And I want to know what suspicions you have to adhere to or harbour on Friday the 13th. Are you by nature a suspicious woman?
Are we talking superstition by chance?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I thought about this and I actually think I am quite superstitious.
Are you?
I always feel very pleased when a black cat crosses my path.
Yeah.
I do count magpies. If I see a couple of magpies or even more, I go through the little song, you know, one for sorrow, two for joy, three for a girl, all of that.
Did Paul McCartney write that?
No. Oh, it's an old traditional song from Days of Woad.
Right.
I tend not to walk under ladders for practical reasons more than anything.
Yep.
And I do have a real four-leaf clover that I found myself in a little frame.
Good God.
And I've got a little Chinese lucky white porcelain cat. So I think that I am. My head tells me that it's all nonsense. Mm. But my heart likes the ritual of superstition.
Yeah, I'm not at all superstitious. I think superstition is, I think it warps your brain, to be honest. And the ones I get really fed up about are footballer superstitions. All this about, Bobby Moore always put his shorts on last before leaving the dressing room. You know, footballers going about wearing, you know, putting the right sock on before the left sock and all that. I think that's all nonsense, don't you?
It is, but it's a ritual, isn't it?
A ritual,
Tennis players are quite into that kind of thing as well.
Yeah.
What's his name? The fiery Spanish one's name's just gone out of my head.
I don't know.
You know, the one with the twitches, the one who kind of twitches and rubs his nose and touches his ear.
Well, hang on. If you're talking about that player, he retired about 40 years ago, didn't he?
No. Is he
around now?
I'm talking about Rafa Nadal.
Oh, Rafa Nadal, of course, yeah. Is he Spanish? Yeah, he is. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And he goes through the little thing where he pinches his nose, then he pulls his earlobe, pulls the other earlobe, touches his shoulder, pulls his socks up.
Yeah.
You know, it's really quite irritating to watch after a while. But
I totally agree.
I think it's to do with ritual, and I think we feel comforted by those little routines that we go through.
Yeah, I like the black cat thing, but that's because my mum told me that when I was a little kid. So I would always look out for a black cat. You know what I mean? And I, funnily enough, saw a black cat yesterday running across the road as I was coming home, and that does stir a little bit in me, but only as an amusement. I mean, smashed mirrors don't really frighten me or anything like that. You know what I mean?
No, I must have broken loads of mirrors in my life.
Exactly. Well, I've broken them just by looking at them, of course, which is a bit of a problem.
Oh, don't say that. Did you ever, by the way, did you ever do the spot on the tongue thing?
What?
My mum used to say to me, if you get a spot on your tongue, it means that you've told a lie.
No, never. If I got a spot on my tongue, I thought I'd have cancer or something. So, no, that was never one for us, I'm afraid. Anyway, there you go. Now, we've talked a little bit over the last couple of weeks about the birthday of two members of Bay City Rollers. And guess what? Old Les McEwen, the lead singer, is 65 today. And, of course, he was the most prominent member of the Bay City Rollers, wasn't he? But also, he was the most troublesome. Did you know that he once was involved in a car accident in which he tore a woman's leg off and drove around with it in the radiator?
Oh, God.
Drove around with the leg in the radiator of his car for 2 days before he discovered it.
That's awful. I'd never heard that.
Yeah, yeah. He was driving somewhere. I'm not saying he was, you know, under the influence of anything. I don't know whether he was or not, but he hit a woman. Right, on a crossing or something like that. Claims he never saw her because it was, you know, early morning or something like that. Kept driving. The poor woman was taken away. Her leg was missing and it was late.
So did nobody ever ask where the leg was? Did the ambulance guys or the police never go looking for her leg?
Well, yes, presumably they did. But, of course, they didn't find it. You know, that's the thing.
So it was a hit and run, basically?
Well, I don't know. I can't remember now. It was many, many years ago. It must be like 30, 35 years ago. I can't remember what the outcome of it was. But, you know, he hit a frail old lady. I doubt if she survived if her leg came off. And the leg was wedged under the bonnet of his car. And nobody found it for 2 days. It's a remarkable story. But you know.
So she was legless and he got away with it.
Yeah.
That, I don't want to joke about it because that is a horrible, horrible story.
It is a terrible story. But he did have a few problems later on, didn't he, with drugs and all that kind of stuff, I think.
Karma is a thing.
Right.
you know, it, whatever you do in life does come yeah. back to bite you on the bum.
Yeah.
And I think one of the great advantages, I must have said this before, of growing older is that we've lived long enough to see that happen countless times.
Yeah.
That whatever you do, there is a price for it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Now then, have we spoken before about the fact that I sometimes feel uneasy about seeing erotic pictures of women in newspapers and magazines when they've got children? And I always worry what their children will think of them, because the one who's getting on my nerves at the moment is Louise Redknapp, who now seems to be taking pictures of her almost kind of semi-naked, certainly erotica, and even talking about the fact it makes her boys feel uneasy. Now, you've got a son, Leslie Ann. I mean, if you were behaving in a pretty disgraceful manner compared to your age when your little boys were, sorry, when your boy was a little boy, you'd feel a bit embarrassed, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think it's disgraceful. It's, you know, it's a thing with boys that they don't want to think of their mothers as sexual beings.
Exactly.
That old Oedipus complex rears its head and it's damaging enough as it is without mum flaunting her tits all over the newspaper.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, this is a family show, Miss Jones, and, you know, we go easy on the language, please. But I mean,
beg your pardon.
Yes,
but you know what I mean.
I think we'll call it the bosom, you know, for the purposes of planet.
The significant bosom.
Significant bazoom, absolutely right. But I just felt completely uneasy. I feel quite uneasy about seeing Peter Crouch's wife, Abby Clancy, although she was a professional model, wasn't she, before she became a mother and all that. And so good luck to her for keeping the shape and all that. But Louise Redknapp is actually, she's almost like flirting with the camera type thing in an erotic sort of way. It makes me feel uneasy.
It does make me feel sick, yeah. I think one of the problems here is that she caught Jamie out. And I think this was the reason their marriage fell to bits.
Right.
That she found out he was playing away from home. And she was supposed to put up with it. And in fact, Harry Redknapp and Sandra were quite scathing about Louise, as if to say, oh, well, you know, this is what boys do. We just have to turn a blind eye and make them put up with it. But actually, women these days won't put up with that kind of thing.
Yeah, no.
But I don't think the answer to it, to reaffirm one's self-worth, I don't think the answer is getting your kit off and splashing your bits around. I just don't think that is going to buy her self-esteem. It's not going
I totally agree. But anyway, look, it's her life. She's got to live it. Now, I'll tell you what the most amusing story I've read this week is, OK? I read an interview with Engelbert Humperdinck, OK? And Engelbert Humperdinck, I mean, how could anybody go through life with a name like that? It was given to him by the legendary manager, Gordon Mills, apparently.
Yeah, I forget what his real name was now.
Yeah, Dorsey.
Jerry Dorsey.
Jerry Dorsey from Leicester. Yeah. Right, from Leicester, can you believe? And it became Engelbert Humperdinck. But it
that was the name of a famous composer
from
the past. Yeah,
it was. But you know, when a name is that distinctive and that bizarre, I remember at school I used to walk past the board that had the previous headmaster's names on it. Okay, because I went to the King's School Chester, which was a great direct rank grammar school, and it was founded by Henry VIII. And the name of every headmaster was on that board, you know, one particular part of the school. And I always thought one of these days I'll be a famous writer and I'll need a pseudonym. And the pseudonym I would have taken was from a headmaster in the early 1900s called Nathaniel Rashleigh, which I thought was a great name, OK?
That is a great name, yeah. But there's nothing wrong with Michael Parry.
Well, it's not exotic enough, really. You need a more exotic name, I think, if you're going to be...
Yeah, but then people find out what your real name is and they splash that around anyway.
Yeah,
you know, it's mad, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, everybody knows that Cliff Richard is really Harry Webb.
That's right. And so, Elton John is
Reginald Dwight. Yeah. The Beatles didn't change their names.
No, they didn't.
Here we go. Now we get all the tweets going. Why do we always have to talk about the Beatles?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's because they're the Beatles.
That's because we do talk about the Beatles.
We do. But anyway, when Jerry Dorsey was still Jerry Dorsey, he used to sleep on his face, literally face down, because he had protruding teeth. And he thought that by putting his body weight onto the front of his face, he would force the teeth back into his mouth, because he was too poor in those days to go and see a dentist and have them done properly.
Did he really?
Honest to God. Isn't that a bizarre sort of observation about your own, you know, your own looks and how to rectify them?
Well, wouldn't you have suffocated?
Well, I don't know. It's just so bizarre. I couldn't
tell where you. Did you find this one? You've been eating cheese before bedtime again.
I'll tell you where it was. Yeah, in the Daily Mail Saturday paper, they have.
Well, it must be true.
The TV pullout, right? And in the back of that, they got this feature where people show them pictures of them down the ages, right? And he actually said, see this picture here, when I was 19, my teeth stuck out like this, you see. He had protruding teeth, you know what I mean, yeah?
I like your Janet Street Porter impersonation.
You Janet Street Porter.
Are you all right, Michael? Oh, yeah, it's really nice to see you.
Yeah, I'll tell you a story about her, actually. Kelvin McKenzie, the legendary and sometimes disgraced and sometimes disgraceful tabloid editor, right, who we both know, he, after the newspapers finished with him, he took up with this ridiculous TV station at the Mirror. Do you remember? Was it called Splash? No, it's called.
I remember him being in television. I can't remember the name of the channel.
Anyway, it was a ridiculous sort of, you know, cable TV station, and it was just full of nonsense and all that kind of stuff.
Was that when he did topless darts?
Yes, that's right. They had a weather presenter who was a dwarf and used to do it bouncing up and down on a trampoline, so that if he was talking about Scotland, he had to bounce a bit harder, you know, to point to Scotland. It was ludicrous and offensive and all that.
Well, that is horribly
horrible.
Offensive.
It was horrible. They had a topless weather presenter, and it was just trash, you know, really mucky trash. But it was of its age, I suppose. It was sort of back in the 80s, 90s, but you couldn't possibly do anything like that today. But anyway, the point is, David Montgomery was head of the group, and he and McKenzie were old friends, so he took McKenzie on to run this. And the other person who was co-running it was
Janet Street Cleaner.
Janet Street Cleaner, that's right, yeah. Janet Street Porter. And the first meeting, they're all sitting around this table, and David, who was an Irishman, said, "Right, Calvin, I'd like you to meet Janet Street Porter. She's a very experienced TV executive, and she'll be working with you on our new TV station." And Carol said, "Very nice to meet you, Janet." And then she said, "Well, what do you know about TV then, Carol? Do you know anything about TV?" And he said, "I have to admit, Janet, it's my first attempt at TV, and I'm looking forward very much to working with you." "Oh, yeah? Well, if you don't know anything about TV, why don't you fuck off, eh?" Sorry. Yeah. And apologies to our listeners. I'm sorry, but that was a verbatim.
Family show.
It was a family show, yeah. But honestly, that was, yeah.
It's not a bad impersonation, actually. Exactly.
And as you know, McKenzie wasn't, you know, used to people talking to him like that for the previous sort of previous 13 years when he'd been editor of The Sun. So it came as quite a shock to him. But anyway, it's not all bad about Janet Street Porter after all, is it?
Did you see? No, it isn't. Did you see him on the Diana show on ITV this week?
I haven't watched all of it. I didn't see the bit he was on, no. Was Stuart Higgins on it?
No, Higgy the human sponge. No, he wasn't. No,
you had a lot more to do with it.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah. Calvin was the one they interviewed. Yeah. But he's looking very old.
Well, I thought last time I saw a picture of him, he was actually looking like he might have had some work done, or looking very young, looking very thin, and looking very, you know, sort of taut-faced, if you see what I mean. Like somebody who might have, you know, done something to try and keep their face straight. He's desperately now trying to break into television. He thinks with all these new TV stations opening, you know, Rupert Murdoch's rumoured to be opening one, Andrew Neil is rumoured to be involved with another one. He sees himself as a TV presenter, but it's you know, I don't think it's something that...
Oh, he should give it up. He's a bit past it now, but he had his tortoise head on, you know, on that thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know when the head looks like it's kind of stretching out of the shell?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
I kept saying to the screen, go back in.
Yeah, a man of many sins. Right, OK, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Leslie Ann, I have to say a big thank you to all the people who are now listening to Planet Porky, you know, increasing numbers every week. Very pleased about that. And we have strong commercial support now, which I'm delighted to, you know, to be able to say. And some of the responses we're getting, and particularly about your contribution, Miss Jones, are very warm indeed.
It's just lovely hearing from everybody, isn't it? Yep. And the vast majority of people are so kind and charming and very amused by our bi-weekly podcast. And, you know, keep it coming. Keep the messages flooding our way, because it's really lovely to have feedback.
It certainly is indeed. Now, Leslie, on a serious subject for a moment, Gareth Southgate has said in the last 36 hours, because of course England are playing internationals at the moment, I fear I might get dementia in my older age. I don't think he should have brought that up like that. He's not suffering from dementia, and he's jumping on a bandwagon of, you know, do footballers suffer dementia because they spent a lifetime heading the ball? Now, you come from a footballing family. Your Uncle Cliff, who's still alive, is a member of the Spurs double winning team. I don't think there's enough evidence around yet to say that heading a football can automatically lead to footballers sadly suffering dementia.
There's not definitive conclusive evidence, is there?
No.
But there have been many examples.
Yes.
But I do think it's insensitive of Gareth Southgate to come out with that.
Yeah, I do. I do.
Because there are a lot of people suffering who are going through that. And he's young. He's not there yet.
No, I totally agree. Of course, the case in point, which everybody always brings up, is Jeff Astle, right? Now, Jeff Astle, as you know, was centre forward for West Bromwich Albion. He scored the winning goal against Everton in the 1968 FA Cup final, sadly, because Everton are my team. But he was a terrific player and he played for England. And he was one of the first recorded cases of a footballer dying from dementia. And ever since, his family have been campaigning. But I don't know what they're campaigning for. You can't, sadly, you can't bring Jeff Astle back. What do they want to do? Do they want to ban heading in football? And if you do that, what would the game be?
Well, that's a bit like banning punching in boxing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really. Lots of people, many, many people, thousands tragically die of dementia every year.
Yeah, they do.
The vast majority of them were not footballers.
Yes. No, that's absolutely true. And it's a very good point you've made there. Recently, we've lost a spate of 66 footballers. Martin Peters, Ray Wilson, Nobby Styles and Jack Charlton, amongst them, did all have dementia towards the end of their lives. But they were very old. They were late 70s, getting into 80s. And as you quite rightly say, you know, sadly, quite a proportion of the population that age do suffer from that sort of thing. But anyway...
The longer you live, you know, the more your chances of getting dementia or a form of Alzheimer's, unfortunately.
I totally agree. Now, listen, we don't want to dwell on death on Planet Porky, because we don't. We like to uplift people and we bring light and shade to their lives. But you won't have been unaware of the fact that at the moment your friend Philip Norman has a book being serialised on Eric Clapton, somebody you know an awful lot about. And when we were discussing this the other day, you mentioned to me, but I want you to tell me the full story, that you worked on the tragic death of Eric Clapton's son, who died after falling out of the window of a skyscraper in Manhattan.
This was one of the worst stories I ever worked on, partly because I had a four-year-old daughter at the time, and I was put on the story because Eric's child, who tragically died, was also 4 years old.
Were you in London or New York?
I had to go to New York to interview Laurie Del Santo, the mother.
Right.
This was in 1991, so my daughter Mia was four.
Right.
And I thought it was a shabby thing to do to a reporter, but you know, we just had to suck it up,
yeah,
didn't we?
Yes.
The story was terrible. Connor obviously was the child of Eric and Laurie, who was an Italian actress. They were separated. They were never married, but they weren't together anymore. She was with somebody else, some producer called Silvio Sardi.
Right.
And they were living in an apartment block in New York, in a flat on the 53rd floor. The mother was in bed with this guy, Silvio.
Yeah.
And a janitor was in cleaning the windows. Mm. One of the big kind of drawing room windows was still open.
Yeah.
And the janitor called to the nanny to watch the child. Mm. And she turned around, but she was too late. He ran through the room, straight through the window, and fell to his death.
I mean, did he think the window was closed? Was he trying to run into the window? Or was he running towards a gap in the sky, which he couldn't understand?
He was 4 years old.
Yes, exactly.
You know, how does anybody know? Yeah. 4 years old is a baby, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Eric was on his way round to take Connor to the zoo. They were going to the Bronx Zoo that day.
Very famous Bronx Zoo.
They'd been to the circus the day before. Yeah. And he was reestablishing his relationship with his little boy. It was the most tragic thing. And obviously, that is it. Yeah. There's nothing you can do about it.
I heard that they took an hour to find Connor's body because it came from such a height and the winds whip around Manhattan. And it took the boy's body around to the other side of the building, the wind.
He did actually fall onto a roof not that many stories down.
Right, right.
And so his body wasn't disintegrated the way some people reported at the time.
Yeah.
The sad bit here, Eric then had to attend his son's funeral just a day or two before his 46th birthday.
Yeah.
He never got over it. But the good bit that came out of it, he had a daughter who he'd never acknowledged called Ruth.
Right.
Ruth Kelly Clapton. The mother was Yvonne Kelly, who was the manager of Air Studios in Montserrat,
right,
which was George Martin, the Beatles producer's studios.
Yes, yes.
And that had been kept secret since 1987, I think, 1985.
Right.
And then it came out the year that Connor died that he'd fathered this child. And they established a relationship after that.
Yeah.
And she stayed in his life. And she's not long ago given him a grandson.
Right.
And the grandson is called Isaac Eric. It's when he was 57.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah.
I think the most amazing thing about it was that he never took back to drink, because he'd been an alcoholic and a heroin addict, hadn't he? Had cleaned his life up. But my God, the sheer terror and stress of losing a little boy at four when you're re-establishing life with him, I just can't believe he didn't weaken and go back onto booze.
Well, of course, not long after this, he met up with the woman who's now his wife.
Yeah.
Who's called Melia, I think.
Right.
She's quite a lot younger than him. She was only 26 when they married.
Yeah.
He was in his late 50s.
Yeah.
And they've got three daughters, Julie, Ella, and Sophie.
Yes.
And he's also now a granddad. So I think he poured all his grief into life, if you like.
Yeah.
And he wrote songs. He wrote those amazing songs, Circus Left Town, do you remember that? And Tears in Heaven, those songs were both about Connor.
Yeah, I remember Tears in Heaven so well, because a few years later I was back in New York and there was a place called the Brickyard Cafe down, which avenue, the Third Avenue, around about 23 or something like that, you know what I mean? And it was brilliant. And one thing I loved about New York, all the time I've been there and lived there, that bars still have great jukeboxes. A lot of the bars, don't they, still have great jukeboxes?
No, I love a jukebox.
I do. And, you know, you've got all the classic hits, you know, My Way by Frank Sinatra and all that. Anyway, one of the records most played in this particular one was that record you've just talked about. You know, if I met you in heaven, would you,
if I saw you in heaven, something like that.
If I saw you in heaven,
yeah, it's a real tearjerker.
My name, bum, bum, bum. And there was loads of Eric Clapton on it. One of the other great Clapton ones that I loved was the slowed down version of, he had a great, Layla, that's right. Do you remember the slowed down version of Layla?
Not really.
Yeah, well, you remember original Layla. It was written about Whitney Boyd, wasn't it? You know, down, 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 down. You remember that one? Well, this one was an acoustic version, and the chorus went, Layla, I've got you in my dreams. And you can imagine him sitting on the stage tapping his
foot. What, he rewrote the words as well, did he?
Thank you, Miss Joe. You know, I don't very often get the lyrics right. So what are the lyrics then, smarty pan?
You've got Layla, you've got me on my knees.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. So it would be, Layla, you got me on my knees. You see what I mean?
Yeah, it's quite nice, actually. You missed your vacation, Mike. Yeah. You've got rather a nice voice,
yeah,
I have to say.
Yeah, I think I have as well. But anyway, look.
You know, Laurie Del Santo went and kind of drowned her sorrows in the arms of George Harrison. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
And that was a very kind of strange crossover, because obviously
Boyd had gone the other way.
Patsy Boyd had gone from George to Eric.
Yeah.
And Layla went from Eric to George.
My God.
Not Layla. What am I talking about?
Laurie. I don't know. The lives of these rock stars. I certainly missed my vocation there. Talking about songs, by the way, although this is out of your time and even out of my time, do you remember this one? Sealed with a kiss. Da na 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 na. It's gonna be a long.
Yeah, I know this song. Who recorded that?
Well, I was going to tell you, because it's his birthday today, Brian Hyland, who's 77 today.
Do we even know who Brian Hyland is?
Well, this is the only song he ever wrote, and I always remember it because I used to listen to it on Radio Luxembourg on my little transistor radio in my bedroom when I was a kid. You know, sealed with a kiss. Gonna be
it's a good song. It is a good song.
Lonely summer.
Darling, I promise you this.
Yeah, did you ever listen to Radio Luxembourg, by the way?
No, I was far too young.
Oh, really?
I was even too young for Radio 1, actually, when it kicked off in 67.
Yeah, so
I didn't really come to radio until the mid-70s.
Oh, right, okay. I loved Luxembourg. I used to listen to it in my bedroom every night instead of doing any homework. That's why, in the end, my academic career fizzled out. I found pop music first, then Win, and then Drink. Not necessarily in that order, but that was...
Well, you've given 2 out of 3 of those things up.
That's very kind of you to say so, Miss Jane. Again, having a go at me. Now, look, I told you I was going to talk to you about... I'm not taking the mickey out of this young lady, but there's an actress called Helen Flanagan, and she was for years in Coronation Street, and she, honestly, very attractive lady, very glamorous, great actress. But she really did sort of confirm her dippiness in a true story that I picked up on the other day. She was in a London hotel. It was an expensive hotel. And she put her shoes under the bed and wondered why there was no sort of, you know, nothing under the bed, and went down and looked at it and screamed and ran out of the room and went downstairs to reception and said there was a man under her bed. And the police were called, and she said, there was a man under my bed. They evacuated the hotel. It was one of those boutique hotels, you know what I mean? Not many rooms and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, it turned out that this was such a boutique hotel, the bed was made of glass. And when she looked underneath the bed, she looked at her own reflection.
Well, that says a lot for her reflection, if she thought she was a man.
Well, yeah, well, it wouldn't be a true reflection because it wasn't a mirror, you see what I mean? It was glass. So all she'd seen was, you know, I don't know, maybe he had a swathe of hair or something like that and all that. But that doesn't do a lot for the sort of, you know, the intelligentsia factor reputation of actresses, does it?
Not really, no, it doesn't. But the question is, would you sleep in a bed made of glass?
The only thing made of glass was the structure of the bed. You know, there's a mattress on it, obviously.
Yeah, but, you know, the kind of thing that goes on in bed,
yeah,
anything could happen.
Well, yes, I suppose so, but I'm sure it'd be reinforced glass, you know what I mean? I've always wondered how anybody could ever sleep on a waterbed. Have you ever had an experience on a waterbed, Miss Jones?
Yeah, I have actually
slept
in a waterbed.
Are you sure this is for family listening?
Well, you did ask the question.
Right, well, you better give me the answer then, I suppose.
Yeah, I can't say I had a full night's sleep, but that's probably not what I was there for.
Oh, dear. I see. Yeah, I think we better move on from this one, don't you?
But family show.
But what is the actual experience like? Is it like sleeping on a bouncing trampoline?
It's like being on a boat, and I get a bit seasick on a boat, you know, all that sort of rocking and lilting. And you can imagine what it's designed for.
Well, no, I don't wish to imagine, thank you. I've always had a very Puritan form of thinking on that one.
You've given all that up.
Given all that up. Well, no, it gave me up, actually, but the same sort of thing. Now, listen, the lady who is going to be the Vice President of the United States of America is a woman called Kamala Harris. Looks very glamorous to me. She's obviously, a very, very strong-willed woman. She's going to be a very powerful woman as vice president. She's a lawyer and she's been district attorney of, I think it's California. And in her victory speech the other night, she looked stunning in a really, you know, bright white outfit, which now seems to be the in thing. Miss Jones, do you have your own bright white outfit? When I last asked you about your wardrobe, you admitted to having about 30 velvet jackets. Have you got a white suit?
Well, I'm afraid I haven't, but it's interesting this came up because my youngest daughter the other night was going through the White Company catalogue.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this white satin trouser suit.
Right.
And she said, I so want you to buy me this for Christmas. So I said, where are you going to wear it? Ooh. We're not going anywhere right now. And she said, I love it so much, I would wear it to do the cleaning, she said.
Really?
And then there was a documentary on television about the Queen Mother
on
Channel 5 a couple of weeks back.
Right.
And it was talking about when the Queen Mother, who was at the time the Queen, and her husband, the king, went on a state visit to Paris.
Right.
And she floored everybody by wearing full-length white dresses throughout the state visit. Mm. And I had a little look at the connotations of white garments.
Yeah.
And, of course, the colour white, which is not really a colour, of course, it's associated with light and goodness and innocence and purity.
Yeah.
And it also represents a successful beginning.
Yes.
So I think that Miss Harris is colour-coding herself and she's giving out very strong messages with the kind of clothes that she's wearing.
Yeah, yeah, no, I totally agree. And, you know, we've just had, we still have... the First Lady, who's a very glamorous dresser, isn't she, at the moment? Who am I talking about here?
What, Carrie?
No, sorry, in America, the US.
Oh, over there. Melania, yes.
Melania, that's right, yeah. So maybe we've got another fashion icon coming into...
Well, I think so. Talking of which, I had a very interesting email from a journalist friend in New York last night.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to read you a little bit of it because it's very, very interesting.
Yes.
He said, I'm on election aftermath overload. I'm not pleased with the outcome. Mm. I know how people feel about Trump, but I think Biden is going to be a disaster if he is ultimately certified. It certainly looks as though things will go that way. Mm. However, I'm encouraged that Trump is at least challenging the results. Mm. Every day, more and more evidence is turning up to show widespread fraud.
Really?
But it's stunning how little curiosity there is on the part of the media to look into any of the allegations, even though the integrity of the entire voting system is at stake. Mm. He says, in the end, if Biden is certified as the winner, then so be it, because that's how democracy should work.
Yeah.
But voter fraud should never be tolerated, not unless we're all ready to relinquish freedom and fairness. Mm. I never thought, he said, I would be living in a country where speech was censored with impunity and elections conducted like those of third world governments. Yeah. Yet here I am, living through this, the once unimaginable set of circumstances. Mm. So it sounds to me like it's all so corrupt and no one cares.
Well, a couple of observations on that. Obviously, Trump is stoking it. He wants to leave a Trump legacy behind, whatever it might be. What I think is disgraceful is that some of these networks, which are very anti-Trump, like CNN, are actually now turning their cameras away from him when he starts making allegations about fraud. On the basis that they, you know, it's nonsense, it's rubbish, we're not going to fill the minds of the American people with this rambling nonsense from Donald Trump, which I think is a disgrace. You know, if it's a free country, they should at least allow him to talk about it.
Absolutely. And if there is widespread voter fraud, as seems to be suspected, then they need to investigate that. And we do need to know about it.
Yeah. I mean, most people now, and I have to include myself in this number, are saying, it's all over, Donald. Forget it. You lost the election. It was narrow, but yeah, I'm afraid you were edged out. And, you know, just move out the way and let the American system move on and the new president get installed on January the 20th. But... you know, I don't know. I think it would be better for America to go on. But you are absolutely right in making the point. If Donald Trump has had the office stolen from him, somebody should be investigating it. Yeah, I quite agree. Listen, how about this report here? How one in four of us keep cash secret from our families? Have you got secret bank accounts that you don't tell your other members of your family about?
Well, I haven't got a partner, so I haven't got anybody to hide anything from.
What about when you did have a partner? Because it wasn't all that happy at one stage, was it? Do you suspect that money may have been salted away that you didn't know about?
Yeah, I do suspect that. And we never had a joint bank account. We kept our own separate bank accounts.
Mm,
But I do know there was an awful lot of money coming in that somehow or another disappeared.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid that's it. Anyway, this says 4 in 10 of us have kept financial affairs, such as a savings account, on or a loan, hidden from the family and friends, a survey has found. The only thing that shocks me about that is that that makes news. I thought everybody did that. You know, partners all the time, whether they're husbands or wives, are salting money away to buy clothes or to go gambling or to spend on their mistress or on their secret, you know, passions or whatever. I don't see why that's a story. Don't we all have? I mean, I've got a half a dozen accounts, which I can barely remember where they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you need to get your house in order because if anything happens to you, God forbid,
your
family are going to have a high time trying to find it all.
Well, my accountant knows where it all is.
Oh, okay.
Because,
but I think that, yeah, most, well, lots of women, I won't say most, I certainly know that lots of women keep bank accounts and they put a little away for a rainy day just in case something goes wrong with the marriage or they need to make a quick escape, whatever. I think it's a sensible thing to do, to have autonomy in one's financial affairs. I think it's quite rare these days for there to be a joint bank account and for each of the partners to know exactly what's coming in and going out.
Yeah, so do I. And anyway, I think people should be independent. That's why I always think it's better, you know, that a woman has her own job and her own existence. Why should she be tied to a husband? That's like medieval, isn't it, really? Just talking about...
It is, really.
Yeah, it is, yeah. I've seen adverts again on the telly, Leslie-Ann, for recruitment for teachers, want to recruit more teachers. And they're aiming at people who haven't been teachers before. You know, maybe people who've come out of the army or ex-policemen or anybody who's retired at 50 wants to start again. Could you ever see yourself as a teacher?
Absolutely not. No, it's interesting because my youngest daughter is working for a supply teaching agency at the moment.
Right.
And she's going out into various schools and sort of filling in here and there. Ooh. And she really enjoys it. She said, the best thing about it is I get to be 12 again. And I think that that is the rub. I think people like us are far too old to go into a classroom and teach kids. Ooh. I think it's a young person's game and that kids relate to younger people because they're not so very far removed from them in age.
Yes. No. Can you remember a teacher during your life who sort of turned your life around?
One, Mr. Pragnell in my junior school.
Right.
Who just believed in me and used to let me come and read out stories to the class that I'd written in my spare time.
Really?
And so on. Go and encouraged my writing. I was only about 11 or 12 at the time.
So what about this then, one? Mama said I was a writer before I could walk.
Well, it's dancer, actually.
I know, but I was substituting it for writer for you, wasn't I, eh?
Oh, well, you were. That's sweet. No, my song has always been Paperback Writer. Here we go, the Beatles again.
Yes.
Or Dancing in the Dark, Bruce Springsteen, who I don't really like, but he wrote that song, which has got the line in it, here I am, sitting here, trying to write this book.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, there you go.
Which is kind of my other song. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I could be a teacher because I'd empathise too much with the children, the way they wanted to do things. You know what I mean? I don't like imposing discipline. And I hate to see children upset. If I'm, you know, if I'm out, you know, in the streets or something like that, and I see a parent scolding their little kid and the kid's crying, I feel awful. I have to walk away. You know what I mean? I can't stand seeing children in distress. So I wouldn't be any good as a teacher.
No, it's horrific. Even on the bus, I have seen presumably a mother slapping her children in front of other passengers on the bus.
I know.
And I think to myself, God, if she'll do that in public, what the hell does she do to them in private?
I know, it's heartbreaking when you read about these things. But anyway, there we go. Right, OK, Ms. Jones, that brings us to the end of another chapter of Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for having joined me. And thank you very much to everybody out there listening to this. We do get a real thrill in communicating with you. And Leslie-Anne, we will be back with our audience very soon.
We will.
He was driving somewhere. I'm not saying he was, you know, under the influence of anything. I don't know whether he was or not. But he hit a woman, right, on a crossing or something like that. Claims he never saw her because it was, you know, early morning or something like that. Kept driving. Poor woman was taken away. Her leg was missing and it was late.
So did nobody ever ask where the leg was? Did the ambulance guys or the police never go looking for her leg?
Well, yes, presumably they did. But of course, they didn't find it. You know, that's the thing.
So it was a hit and run, basically.
Well, I don't know. I can't remember now. It was many, many years ago. It must be like 30, 35 years ago. I can't remember what the outcome of it was. But, you know, he hit a frail old lady. I doubt if she survived if her leg came off. And the leg was wedged under the bonnet of his car. And nobody found it for 2 days. I've always wondered how anybody could ever sleep on a waterbed. Have you ever had an experience on a waterbed, Miss Jones?
Yeah, I have actually.
What?
Slept in a waterbed.
Are you sure this is for family listening?
Well, you did ask the question.
Right, well, you better give me the answer then, I suppose.
Yeah, I can't say I had a full night's sleep, but that's probably not what I was there for.
Oh, dear. I see. Yeah, I think we better move on from this one, don't you? I found pop music first, then women, and then drink. Not necessarily in that order, but that was...
Well, you've given 2 out of 3 of those things up.
That's very kind of you to say so, Miss Jones.